The following content originally aired on the Live and Local program, which airs every weekday morning from 9 a.m. to noon on WKVT AM 1490, your source for news, talk, and the arts. Hope you enjoy it. Thank you for listening. Welcome back to the Live and Local program. Chris Lenoir, your host, and as I mentioned, we've been spending the first part of every Monday morning here in February in observation of Heart Health Month for the month of February with folks from BMH's Center for Cardiovascular Health, nurse practitioner Phaedra McDonough and cardiologist Mark Burke. And we've been speaking specifically about heart disease and how it affects women. And thanks for coming back to the studio again one more time today. Good to see you both here. And I guess we're starting today the whole subject of today's heart disease, how women can beat the odds. Why don't we talk a little bit? I know we've talked a bit about risk in women when you've visited previously, but let's kind of restate some of that. You know, what are the odds of heart disease in women?
Yes. Thanks, Chris, for having us back. So as we've been saying right along, is that one out of three women will die from heart disease in this country, and that women are more likely to die from their first heart attack than men and more likely to have a second one. And so we want to raise awareness in women in our community about these risks. That's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about how to prevent having cardiovascular disease so you can live a long and healthy and productive life.
Yeah, that was one of the most sobering statistics for me was when, well, symptoms for me, when you said one of the leading symptoms of heart disease in women is death and the fact that they, you know, from one heart attack could lose their lives, all the more reason to be aware of the risks, be aware of ways you can prevent it. And as you gave me some materials here, cardiovascular disease of this sense is highly preventable, 90% preventable if people know their risks.
Yes, we do believe that cardiovascular disease is 90% preventable and that most of it is related to lifestyles that we lead today. And so we want to talk today about how to prevent how to prevent these risks and mm-hmm. how to reduce the chances that you will be basically a victim of heart disease. So we'll start talking about those now, if you'd like.
Yeah, no, it's good. I like you have some specifics here. I think there are things that we've touched on before, but I've appreciated you guys coming in here and sharing some specifics because a lot of people, it's like New Year's resolutions. People say, I'm going to lose so much weight, or I'm going to do this in my life or that in my life, but they don't take that next step and say, this is how I'm going to do it. And I think that's what's really valuable about these kinds of conversations with folks like yourself who deal with this every day are some of these specifics. Like the first one here, when you're talking about prevention, is just keep moving. We could be like Mark here, who's pacing around the studio. I have to give that away. He's actually seated now, calmly. But talk a bit about exercise and the importance of exercise in preventing cardiovascular disease.
Well, exercise is extremely important. We live in a pretty sedentary society. Most of us have jobs that we have to sit a good part of the day. And the recommendation is that we get at least 30 minutes of aerobic exercise mm-hmm. daily or 150 minutes a week. And that's just base. If you want to lose weight, we suggest that you double that. And on top of that, it's very important that women do some strength training every week. A couple of days of strength training, you know, 15, 20 minutes is fine. Of some kind of weightlifting, even knee bends or push-ups are really good for that.
And that's really more considered, that sort of weight training is not aerobic exercise.
That's
anaerobic, is that the correct phrase for that?
Yeah, it improves your endurance.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
So it feeds the aerobic exercise
correct.
By letting you be a little stronger, but it is still something that you have to balance out.
Yes.
But when we're talking aerobic exercise, it's exercising your lungs, exercising your heart rate. I know that when you get on an ellipsis machine or a treadmill or a bike, they ask you also to vary your speeds to try and get your cardiovascular system working at different levels.
So there's Phaedra said that this is a minimum mm-hmm. For people to do. And that's true. It's not actually so important that people focus on what their heart rate is.
Mm.
The description, the standard that we use is it's 150 minutes a week of moderate activity. And mm-hmm. moderate activity is defined as walking 3 miles per hour. So that would be, if you divided it up 5 days, it would be 30 minutes walking a mile and a half.
Okay.
And that's actually a quick pace for a lot of people. So they would have to do maybe slower, but a slightly longer. But it's that equivalent. It could be swimming or water aerobics, you know, or snowshoeing or biking, it doesn't matter, but something that's equivalent to that.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, many people, you know, it's a struggle to get to even that minimum.
Right. Now, when we're talking about just people walking in their everyday lives, how many steps a day, how much do people walk on a daily basis and ways that we can get them to walk more? You always hear advice in PSAs and things like that about, you know, park in the back of the parking lot when you walk to the grocery store and things like that. Get a pedometer. I imagine even nowadays phones have pedometer apps on them probably. I wonder how easy it is for people to just kind of track themselves how many steps they're doing a day and how many steps they should be looking at a day to try and achieve these goals.
Mm-hmm. Well, the recommendation is to try to walk 10,000 steps a day, which is about 5 miles. So mm-hmm. I tell people, try to get to 8,000 to 10,000 steps a day.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of Americans walk less than 5,000 steps a day, and anything less than 3,000 steps a day is considered sedentary.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get a pedometer, I encourage you to get a reasonably good one. They're about $10, $15. You can buy them at Walmart. Mm-hmm. And spend the first week just monitoring yourself and actually see what you're doing. And then increase it by maybe 300 or 400 steps a day by walking the stairs,
mm-hmm.
parking a little farther away, you know, waking up in the morning and do a 10-minute walk before you go to work. You can increase it.
And that really is the key, though, that last one you said. I mean, you can add steps here and there throughout the day with going upstairs or parking in the back of the parking lot, all those kind of things. But you do need to set aside a little bit of time in order to achieve 5 miles a day to walk, and 10 minutes is actually a pretty good amount of time to bite off a big chunk of that, I would imagine.
So that recommendation is if you aren't going to do the 10,000 steps is basically if you aren't going to do an extended walk in a day.
Okay.
Right. So and the point of that is that the little bits of activity do accumulate over the day. So mm-hmm. for a lot of people, I think we've talked about this before, walking, you know, a half an hour is just not possible. They're either very out of shape or they have other limitations like arthritis or back pain or something. So accumulating small bits through the day also is good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the 10,000 steps comes in primarily.
And you know, again, this is one of a few things that somebody can do to reduce their risk of heart disease. The other thing that always comes in line with exercise is a better diet. Paying attention to the types of foods that can increase your risk of heart disease versus decrease the risk of heart disease. Now, I keep hearing about the Mediterranean diet, and that's another thing that you've put here on the sheet you've given us. So tell us a little bit about what the Mediterranean diet is.
Well, the Mediterranean diet is high in fresh fruits and vegetables, lean meats, whole grains. It's low in processed foods, as well as salt and low in sugar. So these type of diets significantly decrease your risk for heart disease. It decreases the amount of plaque that will line your heart arteries over a lifetime and works just as well as many of the medications we have out there for treating heart disease.
And then you're also talking here about portions, and that's something that needs to continually be reinforced. And I thought this was interesting, you mentioning how sharing restaurant portions is a good thing. This is something actually my wife and I have started doing where we just split one appetizer, split one course, because what you get in restaurants does feel like a ton of food, and then that allows us to kind of enjoy a lot of different things more than just each getting our own entree and own appetizer.
Yes. Yeah. We eat very large portions.
Yeah.
And we've gotten used to that. And I'll tell folks that they just, you know, have their portions, you know, even if they eat the same foods, if they have their portions, it'll make a huge difference in their weight loss.
Yeah, simple choices you can make to prevent your risk of heart disease. Phaedra McDonough, nurse practitioner, Mark Burke, cardiologist, both with BMH's Center for Cardiovascular Health, joining us here in the studio. We'll take a break and be back with more after these messages. Continuing our conversation now about heart disease and how women can beat the odds with Phaedra McDonough, nurse practitioner, and Mark Burke, cardiologist with BMH's Center for Cardiovascular Health. And just want to mention, too, Phaedra, that you will be hosting a red dress breakfast Wednesday morning, 7:30 a.m. in the Brewberry Conference Center. Talk a little bit about what's going to go on there.
Yes, I'm going to be presenting a 30-minute talk about women and heart disease. We'll be talking about risk factors. We'll be talking about how you can control your risk factors. We'll be talking about some of the statistics about heart disease, and I'll be taking questions.
Huge portions of Eggs Benedict and sausage and things like that will not be served at this
Red Dress breakfast.
Right? It'll be a sensible breakfast.
And food can still be really tasty and not have all that in it.
Without a doubt. And if you want to register for this event or get more information in advance, you can contact Marcy Rushford, 257-8217, or email her at mrushford@bmhvt.org. Once again, that is Wednesday, 7:30 a.m. at the Brewberry Conference Center on the Brattleboro Memorial Hospital campus. I imagine a lot of the things we're talking about today you'll be talking about there. We spent the last segment talking about some of the ways you can help prevent the risks of heart disease with regards to exercise, diet, controlling your weight. I want to talk a little bit more about the mental aspect of this. I mean, certainly people, when they get stressed, that in itself, I don't think people realize how much of a physical strain some of these mental and emotional factors play in this, but I imagine it is pretty great.
It is. Emotional health and cardiovascular health, I think, is quite closely related. And there is research out there that shows that there's a linear correlation between depression and heart disease. In other words, the more depression you have, the more likely that you are going to have heart disease. Also, there's research out there about anger and type A personalities increasing your risk for heart disease, and we do see this in our clinics on a regular basis.
And I think another important piece of that is that stress often leads to poor behaviors. So people eat too much, they don't get the activity, the physical activity they need when they're stressed, and a lot of times the stress is something that we can't change, or one can't change. It's how you deal with the stress, and that's really the key.
Yeah, eating is definitely one way people try and push those blues away, as it were. Another one, unfortunately, is self-medication, turning to things like alcohol and things like that. And that, of course, also puts a pretty good stress on your cardiovascular system.
And for those who smoke, it's very hard to smoke when you're really stressed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, very hard to quit when you're really stressed, because smoking, unfortunately, is actually does help people's stress.
Right. Now, you do hear different studies coming out all the time, 8 ounces of wine a day or one beer a day. I mean, is there any sort of actual scientific validation to these sorts of studies that people are doing when they're saying, this is good for your chocolate? You know, things that people normally associate with being bad for them or being guilty pleasures. Are there actual cardiovascular heart benefits to any of these things? Or what is the center's recommendation on this?
There are different ways of looking at that. Water is essential to life, but you can drown in it.
Good point.
And which is true of almost everything else. So the things you mentioned, like chocolate, there's a lot of evidence that at least small bits of chocolate here and there are probably, if not helpful, then at least not harmful. And it's the same thing with alcohol. I mean, it's still a debatable point about alcohol, but for women, it's a glass of wine, and for men, 2 glasses a day, it seems to have a benefit, but it's not clear if there are other things that are going on that are actually what's causing the benefit, or if it's the alcohol itself. So, I mean, it's a debatable point, but those things are, you have to put them into context.
And it's probably certainly not as much of a benefit as if you, it would be more beneficial to not have that glass of alcohol at all. I think it would be safe to say, right? I mean, people say, it's good for my heart to have this glass of wine. Yeah, well, it's also good for your heart not to have that glass of wine.
There is what's called a J-shaped curve,
uh-huh.
which means people who consume nothing have actually a slightly higher risk than people who consume the recommended.
Okay.
And then as you get above that, so the risk goes up when you don't consume anything, and the risk goes up when you consume too much.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an arguable, it's very arguable. It's not clear what that means.
Yeah.
So there's no recommendation that if you don't drink, to start drinking.
Right.
because it isn't clear. But also, if you do drink, don't drink too much.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it depends, the J, as you put it, you know, depending on what font that J is in, will depend on how high up that second curve goes, right?
Yeah. So. Well, it doesn't go up that high.
No, definitely.
When you don't consume anything. But it does, on the other end, when you consume too much, it goes up very high.
One of the things that, my takeaways from these conversations that we've had over the month of February is just how interrelated heart disease is with other health problems. And I think that's, before we get out of here, I think it's good to remind people about some of these other health risks or health problems they may have and how that interrelates with heart disease.
And are you talking about high blood pressure?
Sure. And
so, when you don't exercise enough and you become overweight or obese, that brings on additional health problems that contribute to heart disease. And one of those is high blood pressure. And so we encourage people to have their high blood pressure treated. I hear a lot that people don't want to go on medication for their high blood pressure, but yet they also don't lose the weight or exercise or do the other things that they need to do in order to try to get it down. So we treat blood pressures where the top number systolic is 140 or greater, or the bottom number is 90 or greater. And ideally, our blood pressure should be 120 over 80 or below. So what I would tell people is that if you have high blood pressure, have it treated.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't, your heart will change over time, and then you'll have additional problems such as congestive heart failure from untreated high blood pressure over the years. And if you lose the weight, you drop your salts, you do your exercise, and your blood pressure drops, and you don't need to be on the high blood pressure medication anymore, then that's wonderful.
Yeah.
But treat it if you have it.
Absolutely. Now, we've been focusing on women with heart disease here during the month of February, and then a subpopulation of that that's at even higher risk are women who are diabetics, who are at risk for heart disease. I mean, it seems like diabetes in general is just something that can contribute to a lot of health problems if it goes unchecked.
If you have diabetes, chances are you're going to have heart disease.
Mm.
They really come work and play together. Diabetes will increase the amount of plaque in your arteries. It's also associated with congestive heart failure. It increases your risk for heart attacks. It damages your kidneys, your eyes, your nervous system. It really is an incredibly destructive disease. So I just encourage people to try not to go there.
And diabetics actually die from heart disease. That's what they die from.
And is it with heart disease, is it something, is the goal here, when we have these sort of get-togethers and, Heart Health Awareness Month and these sorts of things, is it to prevent people from getting heart disease to start with? Is it to prevent them from dying from heart disease? I mean, how far can we go? How are we doing in terms of making people aware of the risks of heart disease, and what is the end goal? Is it actually achievable to prevent heart disease, or are we just looking at trying to prevent the fatalities from it? I mean, both are worthy goals. So I'm just wondering how much good can be done in these situations.
So I think there are two ways of looking at it. One is, how long do you live?
Mm-hmm.
And the other is, how pleasant is the ride until you die?
Right.
And I hear from a lot of people, I don't care if I die. When that's fine. It turns out most people don't die from these problems. They suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And so for those who have an established problem, preventing suffering is what I, well, actually, either way, whether you don't have the established problem or you do, it's trying to smooth that ride out. And so people have they really don't have any idea of what it means when they become as debilitated as they might. And from my point of view, the most important thing is that the person can prevent that suffering.
Yeah.
And for young people who have children and they want to see them grow up and they want to have grandchildren, you want to be able to participate in kids and your grandchildren's lives. And you can do that if you take care of yourself. And if you don't, you probably won't.
And that's a really good point in terms of the behavior that we can model for people in our lives. If we are doing things that are heart smart, heart healthy, especially the impact that can have on young people is really important in making sure the next generation of people don't have the risks of heart disease.
Well, and what's most interesting to me is that the changes that children make actually have a greater influence going forward
uh-huh.
in the other direction.
Mm.
So and unfortunately in the school systems, one of the places where they back off is with the early education stuff. So that piece is really critical. And if kids learn to eat right, they actually often inform their parents, and their parents begin eating right. Or if parents are concerned about their children, the parents will then also begin eating correctly. It's a really powerful piece that we, I think, neglect.
Yeah. Great. Any last parting words here before we get out of here for the month? It's been a nice month visiting with you all and talking about heart health and preventing heart disease in women. Obviously, if people have concerns about these things, they should talk to their primary care physician. They can refer people to the BMH Center for Cardiovascular Health and all the specialists that you have there. But anything else that you just want to add?
I just want to thank you for letting us talk to the community about this. It's such an important topic. And I think you're right. We need to be an example for our family and friends. And that's how we're really going to change this.
Yeah, absolutely. And our pleasure to do this. That's what we're here for on the radio, is to have these kinds of conversations. Appreciate you both coming in and doing it. Enjoy this Monday.
Thank you.
We've got to go to a break, and then it's Talk Radio News Service after these messages on Live and Local. The preceding content originally aired on the Live and Local program, which airs every weekday morning from 9 a.m. to noon on WKVT AM 1490. You can get more podcasts by going to www.1490wkvt.com.